This is hitting record now. So, you know, if you're going to say something mean about somebody, just should wait. Not that you... I don't want to leave the impression you say mean things about people, but we both, you know, sometimes we get carried away. I wonder if people know that. We get carried away.
Yeah.
What do I call today? Oh, October 25, 2021. Ron James. More with Ron James today. You know, this is a good man, Ron James.
What's he? He's flogging something.
Well, he was on just a short time ago talking about his book, but he came on late, so we didn't have, you know, full.
Again, what I like about it is just when people call up the show, when they see a name, they know it's just good. And he's all right.
That's right. What's that?
Do you
noise?
Hear this?
Yeah, I do. I do hear it very. It's annoying.
Oh, I just hit my wire. It's fine.
Okay.
I'll have to change this cord out.
It says preparing live stream. This meeting is being live streamed. All right, well, panic. We did that on purpose. People know about us. Hang on a second here. Oh, I can... going to move that over, and now, look, you're going to do, you know, Phil's thing. Here we go. I'm sorry, did you want some... do you want...
No, I just called... I'm calling the list up here.
No, I looked away. I just looked away for a second. I'm like, did he die?
Well, I do this infrequently, so I got to call up the list. I don't want to miss anyone.
Then I looked over. I'm like, oh, he's just being dramatic. Yep. All right, here we go.
Never.
No, I know.
The following episode of the Humble and Fred Show is brought to you by the Chambers Plan, bodog.eu/sports, Gig Sky, Health Gauge, the Retirement Sherpa, and Doer. I'll tell you, I love my Doer pants.
I'm getting you some, I got a pair here for you. So at some point soon, we got to get together. I'll drop off some new pants for you.
Yeah, looking forward to that. The ones I got originally, I just love them. They're just so comfortable and stylish.
Yeah, well, you're lucky, though.
Why?
You just are.
Okay. So are you.
No, I'm in this particular area. You're just luckier than me. And because you've retained, and I say this, listen, you were the first person to point out in my 40s, you used to say I had golfer's bum, or what did you say, I had golfer's ass?
Something like that. I came up with something on the spur of the moment and hung on to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hung on to it for a long time. And what you were referring to was the fact that my ass started to flatten out.
Yeah.
And anyway, fast forward to now, where I have no ass to speak of. And when I wear my Doer pants, Rachel thinks I should get them taken in on the sides, which I don't even know if you can do that, because, you know, I'm like, from the front, they look great. They're nice pants, but I have sort of a gathering of almost like a baggy diaper vibe now to the back of my pants, because I've got nothing to fill out that space. And I'm jealous of the fact that you have retained into your 60s. Your ass.
one of the few attributes I have, I guess, is I still have an ass. But I mean, you're not alone, and often older guys, you look, and that gathering of material that just hangs off their ass because there's nothing filling it out, it does look a bit weird. Although you take the attitude that, hey, he's an old guy, that's what it's like, you know.
Having said that, these Doer pants, I've got the relaxed jean one, and then I got another pair that I like. They're the adventure pants, and they seem to fit my waning ass better than most of these pants that I get. Although she still said I might want to have some of that material gathered.
Right. And this is no reflection on Doer, of course. It's
Well, they can't help if it's not there. They can't put an ass into their pants. It would be too expensive.
Is there some, you know, they have, you know, there's all sorts of products out there. Is there not a couple of things sort of like you can strap around your waist that gives the appearance of an ass and then you pull your pants up over it?
Yeah, I suppose. I'm sure
there is. I bet you there's something like that. Yeah.
You know.
But when you sit down, well, how would that feel? You'd be like sitting on beanbags or something, depending on the material it was made out of.
I'll be honest with you. I've thought of those kind of things, and at some point you kind of go, ah, this is who I am, and I'm gonna, yeah, man, I thought about that. Okay, I get like an ass, you know prosthetic so that I look, you know, different in pants, or that pants fit differently. But then I thought, right, at some point I'm like, then I gotta carry that thing around with me. What if it gets wet? You know, I've got my ass. Oh, what? And what if you forget it after a swim? You know, you forget to put it back in the pants.
Yeah, I have to think about that when I see older women that were probably, you know, well, they are large breasted, and now the boobs really hang low. And I just think, what's that like every day, every time you get up, everywhere you go, you're carrying those around with you? Must be awful. You know, breast reduction surgery, as I've told you, runs in our family. Like, a few women in my family actually had to go and have their breasts reduced with a mind to when you get older, because they become saggy. You can tuck them into your belt if you want, but I actually feel for women when I see that. You know, they struggle to get up, and they have these huge breasts just hanging there, and I think OHIP should cover the removal of those.
Mm-hmm. I know you do. Oh, hang on a second. You know, but you were a big-breasted woman, and you dealt with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, mine was vanity, you know.
Well, no, but it was also got in your way. You couldn't swing a golf club. And
I couldn't swing a golf club. I was worried about when I got older.
That's right.
Them hanging down.
And I used to ask you occasionally, I'd say, Fred, do your tits hang low? Do they wobble to and fro? And do they?
Yeah.
And you would say, yes, I have to throw them over my shoulder like a. I can't remember the rest of that.
Hey, you know, everybody's got their own thing.
Everybody's got something.
And what people struggle with, you know, whether it's physical, mental, it's just going on out there. You know that.
Yes, I do. I'm going to my doctor today. It's interesting because on the way to my physical, this is my GP, Dr. Sharif, I'm going to have to sit in my car while I get a phone call from my heart specialist, not my cardiologist, but the guy that my cardiologist recommended me to. He's an electrophysiologist. He's a heart doctor that deals with the electrical chambers of your heart. Not to be confused with the fact that you haven't, if you were still working with me in the studio, you'd see how I walk now. I limp. I have a limp because of this neuroma that just developed in my right foot. Not to be confused with the burning sensation that's constant in my left toe. These are the things I deal with every day.
What is neuroma?
It is a, it's like a nerve, it's a bit of nerve damage, but it's in the bottom of my foot. It's actually called something else, but I went to see a chiropodist who is a foot specialist of, and of course I've ordered up the what are those things called, the inserts in your shoes, the orthotics.
Orthotics,
because orthotics. Something's happened, as you know, and again, it's an old guy thing. Some people get plantar fasciitis, which is a hardening, or it's your plantar, your fascia that stretches on the bottom of your foot. I don't have that. I got some other thing that allows me to just, I've been limping for like a week and a half. It's just fucking, it's incredible, really.
Do you think at some point you may be instructed to maybe not swing a golf club?
Oh, here we go. I knew it. Yes. No, golf clubs. It's always the golf clubs with you.
No, listen to what I'm saying.
I will.
The torque, the stress that puts on your body, you're not going to be a young man forever. Maybe at some point they're going to say, you know, you might want to pull back a bit and give your body a little bit of a break here.
Yeah, maybe.
You can't keep swinging a golf club like you're 25 years old. So maybe Well, just think about it. Does that not make sense?
Well, maybe. I don't know what that has to do with the bottom of my feet.
Well, every time you take a swing, maybe you're pressing on something. Or remember, things are changing in that old body of yours.
Oh, no, they are.
Of course they are. And certain stresses that you could handle or take previously, maybe not so much anymore.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you really have to really explain
that. Yeah, you should. The thing I have is called... No, I do. You should explain it to me. It's called metatarsalgia. And it's a condition which the ball of your foot becomes painful and inflamed. Anyway, so I ordered the...
Causes?
It doesn't say swinging a golf club.
Well, does it talk about... What are the causes?
Well, in my case, it's sort of the weakening of the arches of your foot.
Oh.
And it over time, as you get older...
Right.
Which is why they recommend orthotics. Although the chamber plan covers it, but no insurance covers all of them, but it covers a good portion of it. Anyway, I'm going to try it out. All I know is every day is an adventure in this body of mine. Although, strangely enough, I will say, just before we get off it, because I do want to talk about other stuff, my back feels...
Oh, I don't.
I do. My back feels great, and my shoulders feel great. What about you? I mean, is there a burning sensation anywhere in your body?
Well, say that again.
Is there a burning sensation anywhere in your body?
Not really.
That's too bad.
I told you, I don't know if it was on the show, one day in August, in the pool with the family, and... My son and I often have, certain rivalries where we try to outdo each other. And we're at the end of the pool, and I really thought, excuse me, for a second that I would be able to swim to the end of the pool quicker than he.
I'm sorry. How long ago was this?
Just a few weeks. Well, mid-August, maybe.
Okay.
And Johnny Slapshot did the 3-2-1, and we went. When I hit the water, I went too deep and then tried to bring my arms up. And something went in my shoulder. And moment to moment, it's fine, but certain movements, it's like, oh, that hurts. Oh, there's a twinge there. But as I say, moment to moment, it's fine. It doesn't ache when I'm in bed or it doesn't bother me at all. Even when I've golfed recently, it doesn't bother me. It's just if I bend it back a certain way, I can feel it.
On the front of your shoulder?
That's the extent of my problem.
On the front of your shoulder or on the back of your shoulder?
No, more on the, inside. Wouldn't that be the rotator?
Well, maybe. It's all a rotator cuff, but it's just, some are more aggravating than others. Like I said, I spent all last winter rehabbing both of my shoulders. And I can tell you, from as many golf swings as I take, my back feels pretty good. It's just that it's such an old guy thing. Because I, up until like now, 2 weeks ago, other than this, thing that's been going on in my left toe now for a couple of years, which I thought was gout, but it's not. Up until 2 weeks ago, I seemed fine. And then one day, my foot just started to hurt. I didn't do anything to it other than just, I got to a certain best before date and my foot went, well, that's enough of that.
Yeah, it's screaming out.
Yeah, my foot's telling
you,
that's it.
You're getting older, you got to go a little easier on me.
Yeah. Listen, we got
your
a lot.
Hey, your body is talking to you.
Your body is a wonderland. Just before we started the show, Fred and I were discussing, and welcome everyone. We haven't officially welcomed you. You were part of the pre-show, but this is how it works. We did the pre-show. Phil's not here. Of course, we can't tell you where he's working, but he's making meatballs and putting stuff together in Sweden. Ron James on the show. Just before we started, we were talking over the COVID numbers, which are very encouraging and some of the lowest. Well, it started with this conversation. I said, Fred, these are the lowest U.S. numbers that I can recall seeing. And now it's the weekend. I know that. But yesterday in the U.S., they had 17,000 cases. 2 days ago, they had 30,000 or so. On Friday, it was closer to 70 or 80, but here in Canada yesterday and the day before, around 1,100 cases in Ontario. I looked here, and as of a couple days ago, we had only 300. Our 70, yeah. It's 370. Our 7-day average in Ontario is 379.
I keep saying it. As part of those numbers, when they release them, You know, it's like, say it's 350, 280 are unvaccinated or unknown status, whatever that means. I wish of the double vaxxed people that have contacted COVID or
contracted. COVID, contracted or
contracted.
Contracted, COVID, yes.
They would give a profile of that. Because when I have heard it, it's all people over 75 with pre-existing conditions. The people without age and pre-existing conditions, double vaxxed, contracting COVID, are next to nothing. Like, next to nothing. And I just wish they would give that statistic if they could. It would be more reassurance for people.
So, what you're saying, and I agree with it, I just want to... And I want to stay with it for a second. So that of the 300, let's call it 400 because it's easy, of the average 400 people a day, do you have a feeling or a percentage or an idea how many are the older, compromised, 75 plus? Like,
almost all of them. When the odd time, they'll give that statistic. But I wish they would just give it every day with the numbers. It's just reassuring because people don't hear it all the time. Double vaxxed people that are getting it are vulnerable people.
Right.
And some slip through the cracks, of course. But the point being, if you're double vaxxed, unless you fall into an age category or pre-existing condition or you're vulnerable on some level, your chances of getting it are pretty slim.
No, that's all. You're right. It would be great if when they supplied the numbers, they could break it down. Out of every 1,000 people, this is how many who are not double vaxxed that are getting it. And the numbers of people that are vaccinated that are getting it are so, you know, as you say, they're a specific group of people. They're over 75. They're compromised. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why it's so hilarious. You know, hilarious, sad, stupid, whatever you want to call it. Last week when Colin Powell died of a million other things, as well as COVID, how they tried to make it seem. Why do they? What is their point down there that they want to make it seem like getting vaccinated is a bad thing? Is it just because they're so polarized in terms of their, inalienable rights?
I don't know. I've given up. I'm just reading a story here about the new chief medical officer of Florida. I don't know exactly. The Surgeon General of Florida went to a meeting last week with somebody
who has
stage 4 breast cancer. And as he came in, and this an appointee endorsed by Trump, endorsed by DeSantis, he came into the room and they asked him and his age, can you just put these masks on? This woman is vulnerable. And he refused.
The Surgeon General refused.
Yeah. So he's making a political statement there. What is wrong with just saying, yeah, you know, I'm not big on this. And, you know, you've read my reports. I don't think masks do a lot. But for your own, you know, for your benefit and for your peace of mind, I will put it on. Well, what would be wrong with saying that?
I don't know. What would you do if that was your wife or daughter and it was in a compromised position and this dude walked into the room and wouldn't put a mask on? You'd say, well, I think you should leave. And he's the Surgeon General.
Yeah. They're just evil, evil people. They just are. And it's like the odd time I throw on Fox News, it's like, why are you being evil? Why can't you just be nice?
Well, I'm glad you brought up Fox News because I was about to play something for you. Isn't this interesting? We did not plan this, folks. Because I wanted to bring up this subject so that we could segue to one of the only guys on Fox. He's kind of he was there while Shepard Smith was there, I think. But Neil Cavuto is one of the only guys on Fox who has sort of him and Chris Wallace still think of themselves as decent, you know, news people. Mm-hmm. Here's Neil Cavuto.
And I know, you know, it's going to get me in trouble. I hear from a lot of people, well, Neil, you know, I've got a lot of nasty emails and the same ones. You're never Trumper. You're this. We don't trust you. We don't believe a word you're saying. And that's just coming from my family. But having said that, I just want to stress here, this is not really about me. It's not about people's political positions on this. I get that. No one likes to be ordered to get a vaccine. But I can tell you right now, those who have been vaccinated are in far better position right now to survive this and even handle cases where they come down with this.
So the scroll underneath that report from a Fox News guy says Neil Cavuto credits COVID vaccine with saving his life. But the rest of them on that network, and again, I think I'm too dumb to understand why. I'd love to have a conversation with Tucker Carlson and say, okay, what are you getting out of this by not having your citizenry vaccinated?
Well, you know, the answer is it's ratings. You measure their evilness by the fact that there is a mandate, there is a mask mandate at the studios there. They all have to wear masks.
And they have to be vaccinated to work there now.
Yeah. So, you know, and, you know, they continuously tell you these are not news shows. These are opinion shows. They're almost like slash news infotainment shows, so to speak. Yeah. So they're just doing it. They're just feeding the morons and it gets them ratings. Listen, Fox News has all the morons all to themselves, people with normal functioning brains. And, you know, CNN and MSNBC have their problems on the major networks. They all do, of course. But, you know, Fox has the morons all to themselves. And that's a sizable number. The other networks have to split the normal people. We've said this continuously, and that's the strategy.
But you did bring up something in our pre-show meeting. And I don't understand it either, which is, okay, in Canada, where we're well into the mid 80 percentiles, 83, 84 of eligible citizens fully vaccinated. In the States, I don't even think it's 50%, but why are their numbers coming down then? Is it just attrition? There's just less people to get the virus? Or
well, I'll tell you. Our friend TJ Connors, who you know, who has left the radio business, by the way.
Now, you were telling me he's gone into real estate.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Doing quite well.
Yeah, good for
him. But anyway, he was at a wedding or a bachelor party in Austin, Texas, a couple of weeks ago. And he said to me, Freddie, I got to tell you, it was great. And I said, why? And he said, well, number one, you get down there, it's a bit disturbing that nobody has a mask on. But he said, you quickly sort of fall into that mainstream. He said, the best part is nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about COVID. Nobody talks about the virus. He said, it's just normal, normal, normal. And he said, he talked to a couple of guys down there and he asked them about it. And the general consensus was, yeah, at work, you know, they told me I had to get it. So I got it. But a lot of workplaces in Texas aren't telling you that. No mandates. So people just are, if they're sort of being asked to get it, they get it generally. And if it doesn't come up, they don't. And he said that was the most refreshing part, because up here in Canada, as we know, it's sort of the conversation, still the prevailing conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And even on this show, and you watch the news, and he said he even watched a couple of local newscasts, and it's not even mentioned. And he said, I really got this feel of back to normal. He said, of course, I came home wondering, you know, did I get it? Am I going to get it? So it was a bit of a, you know, he was holding his breath when he got his test to come home, but he was fine.
I don't have time today, but I found some statistics on just how non-divided Canadian and Americans, this is an American survey, but it applies here, just how. And it goes, the reason I found this is a couple of weeks ago I had said to you, you know, we make it seem like everyone's, you know, up in arms about this thing. But in actual fact, the anti-vax fraction is a small percentage of society. It's as same there as it is here. I mean, most people have been compliant. In fact, 81% of U.S. adults have either received the COVID jab. That's one dose, or plan to in the immediate future. But you watch Fox and you read some of these things, it sounds like, well, no one's going to get it.
Well, I told you about, you know, John Stewart's new show, The Problem.
Yeah, and you're going to start watching it today.
You know, I mean, last week it was just perfect. It was the way he positioned it. It's like these people talk about freedoms. You got it all wrong. COVID took your freedom. Politicians and medical people are trying to give it back to you. Yeah, you not exactly. understand that?
No, it's they
COVID.
Don't.
It's COVID that took your freedom.
Yeah.
It's not these people. They're trying to give it back to you. Use your head. So roll with this thing and you'll can have your freedom back that was never taken to begin with.
No, exactly. I don't want to get into these stats today because we got other stuff, too. I got to tell you about a Peterborough road trip I took yesterday.
Oh, nice.
The 13th.
We got to talk about this.
And Alec Baldwin.
Oh
my God. Oy gevalt.
I just keep thinking about his life now.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, just quickly before we leave this topic. Hmm. The 13% of Americans, and we'll say Canadians as well, the 13% who are anti-vax are equal to the percentage who don't own a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
It's half the number who believe in Bigfoot. This is from a survey, 26%. Mm-hmm. And nearly 50% smaller than the number who don't believe in God, 19%.
Mm-hmm.
It's less common than brushing your teeth in the shower, which is done by 17%. This is anti-vaxxers. To my mm-hmm. point, which is, it makes mm-hmm. it seem like it's such a big mm-hmm. deal. It's not. Most people mm-hmm. aren't that. If you subtract the people who have legitimate health reasons for not getting vaccinated, the number of conscientious anti-vaxxers dips below the percentage of Americans who don't wear deodorant, and that's 11%.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
No, I know. That's why I guess generally they should be ignored. But listen, and a lot of anti-vaxxers, they probably don't even believe it. Guys like Chris Sky selling T-shirts and stuff, they've identified it as a means to make money. It was Y2K, right? There was a lot of people didn't believe it, but they turned it into a business. And a lot of people have done this as well.
Yeah, so I think. I agree with you.
And and there's a lot of people. You know what human nature is like. Once you throw your lot in, once you take a side, it's hard to admit you were wrong or backtrack. You feel silly. So you just go all in. We know some people like that. You go like, all in on
it. It's like my brother said, it's like you identify your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You're in this tribe. And I said this about Chris Sky right after we interviewed him. I said, this is the most famous this man will ever be uh-huh. in his life. And in a couple of years, no one will remember him. But this is his uh-huh. this is his moment in the sun. And, yeah. Who knows what, he's going to eventually have to get vaccinated. He probably is vaccinated. Stupid tit. Before we get to Alec Baldwin and the, I had this interesting story I couldn't wait to share with you.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, I can't wait.
Only because I'd never done this before. But let's take a second here. I'm going to go into some more detail about Dewar pants and how you can get them for a nice price. But first, why don't you talk about this?
Well, I'm going to tell you about Bodog.eu/sports. Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker, or a casino player, Bodog is your number one source of online gambling entertainment. You know, all the major sports are there. You can, wager a few of this and that's on whoever, like tonight. The New Orleans Saints, a 4.5 pick over Seattle. Yes, a 4.5-point pick over Seattle. The Seahawks pay $170 to win. And our listless, lousy, who can figure out what's wrong with them, Toronto Maple Leafs. Really, it's a toss-up in Carolina tonight, so you might want to check that out.
Excuse me, I've heard your Leafs stink. Have they won a game yet? Have they...
Well, Saturday night, they played the Pittsburgh Penguins, who were missing Sidney Crosby.
Right.
Evgeny Malkin. Their best defenseman, Chris Letang, were playing a bunch of rookies, and they beat the Leafs 7-1.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Sorry. It's just...
That's good. The $40 million, they think people are picking on them and being unfair with criticism, so it's showing up on the ice.
Oh, that's a bummer.
From their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, and feature-rich poker room to their fully loaded casino and racebook, Bodog.eu/sports is providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. Check it out. It's fun.
Check out doer.ca, doer.ca, D-U-E-R.ca. Put in the promo code HUMBLEANDFRED15 for 15% off jeans, pants, joggers, shorts, outerwears, and tops. I have the official name of this. The pants, like, I've got your new pants here. Same with Phil. But what I got this time around was called the Live Free Adventure Pant. And I'm going to tell you, I'll be wearing that in Italy, where I'm off to in about 3 weeks' time. Found a place to stay in Florence. That's near our buddy Tim Daniels. No, I'm not staying at Tim's place. But these are the kind of pants where they even look good on me, a man with no ass. And they got zippers on. The legs are cool. And they're comfortable. And like all doer pants, they're made with the most amazing materials that give this comfort. And the reason they call them the world's most comfortable pants for men and women. Use Humble and Fred 15 for 15% off your order at doer.ca. Oh, we got about 15.
Maybe I'll make you a paper mache ash.
You should.
I will.
You should do it.
I'll make a mold of mine.
Yes.
And then paper mache you an ass.
Well, yeah, that's great. Cool. Listen, no offense, because you're pretty good, but if... You know, if I was going to get a paper mache ass, can I get of a younger man's ass? Because yours is starting to a little bit saggy.
Well, we'll see.
Anyway, do you want to do Peterborough, or should we stay with Alec Baldwin?
No, I just said about Alec Baldwin. I mean, everybody's aware of it, and I'm sure has read a lot of the stories, and everybody's still trying to figure out why a loaded gun would be on set or. You know, the question was asked so many times over the weekend, how could this happen? And I still really have not heard a definitive answer.
Well, let me just sort of jump in. From what I'm read, I'm just going to get the article I put aside for us. But what I read, everyone thinks it was a gun with bullets in the chamber. It wasn't. That's from what I've read.
Oh, I read that the guy handed him a loaded gun by mistake. But again, it just goes to what I say. Like, what is the story? What are you reading?
Well, the story I heard in... Oh, there it is, Alec Baldwin. So, there was some trouble on the set. The morning of the accident, some of the union people showed up and got their stuff and left. They weren't being paid, and so some non-union people came in. Now, I say that even though, according to the article here, I think it's a Los Angeles Times article, that still those people weren't working with the gun people. The person that is the safety person on a set is called the armorer, I think it is. And the gun is filled with some kind of material,
gunpowder,
and something else that makes it appear to it.
Okay, all right.
So they checked the gun. In fact, the gun had gone off on its own a couple of times, and they checked it before they gave it to Alec Baldwin. This was earlier in the day, apparently.
Gone off without anybody pulling the trigger?
This is what I'm saying. So when Alec Baldwin, I thought, like you did, that he fired the gun. But it turns out, from what this article, it sounds like, it turns out that he just pulled the gun out and it fired. By mistake.
And it just happened to be pointed at this woman.
It says Baldwin's stunt double accidentally fired two rounds Saturday after being told the gun was cold, lingo for a weapon that doesn't have any ammunition. A colleague was so alarmed by the prop gun misfires that he sent a text message to the unit production manager. He says, we've now had three accidental discharges.
Wow. It's just, you just want, like, it's a movie set. And, you know, and I keep hearing people refer to computer generated effects now. Like, why would you even need anything of the sort on a movie set now? I mean, easy to say because, you know, they want the movie to be as authentic as possible. But my goodness, like... What do you, and again, the woman, she, you know, a young son, a husband, and she's gone and horrible, horrible, horrible. I don't want to underplay that. But going forward, what does Alec Baldwin do? Like,
oh, I know.
How do you go on Saturday Night Live? How do you continue your podcast? I don't imagine this movie will be completed. Like, how do you function as Alec Baldwin going forward with this on you now? Like,
yeah,
I can't imagine.
Well, you know, it's funny, Alec Baldwin, who has had a...
It's really funny, yeah.
Okay. It's interesting. What's interesting?
You know what's funny? No, not funny.
No, interesting. Yes, funny. Interesting. Interesting. Although I like when people say to me, you know what's funny? I go, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. I do know what's funny. But in this case, it's interesting that he's had a pretty, I would say, checkered, you know, mm-hmm. you know, the thing with his, you know, the stuff with his kids. And, you know, he hasn't completely skated free. But I thought the same thing. Like, what happens to Alec Baldwin's career now? He is forever the actor who accidentally, mm-hmm. I just want to read this last thing. Mm-hmm. Baldwin removed the gun from its holster once without incident. But the second time he did so. So they're not saying removed it and pointed it and shot it. Just removed it. The second time he did so, ammunition flew toward the trio. So what is the ammunition in a supposedly prop gun, you ask?
Don't know. That's why I read, one of the reports I read said somehow he was handed a loaded gun. And what does loaded mean? Does that mean with a real, normal, authentic bullet? Or does it mean loaded with some prop thing?
Yeah, some kind of thing, you know? Gunpowder, yeah. Or something.
Yeah.
But in this article, which again, I saved it so we could have... They said when they brought it onto the set, somebody said cold gun, meaning it had been checked. Anyway... Back to your or our point about what does happen to Alec Baldwin now.
Yeah, and I'll say it again. You don't want to underscore the woman that's dead and her family. It's just horrific. But, you know, this now, because of his profile, this is sort of about Alec Baldwin. And, you know, you don't. How do you go on Saturday Night Live and be Donald Trump now? You don't. You know, like.
No, I know.
Like, how do you do that? Yeah, I'll do that. Like, it's...
Yeah, your persona will... Here comes Ron, by the way. His persona will forever be linked...
Yeah.
...with this incident now.
And we won't even bother going over it, but you want to talk about the evilness of the United States and what's become of the Republican Party and some of the horrible things so far that have been said gleefully about Alec Baldwin. You know, as payback, because he mocks Donald Trump. And he's one of those lefties. They're almost enjoying it. And it's, how evil do you have to be to go there that quickly?
No, 100%. Anyway, we'll talk about this, you know, Alec Baldwin, and then the article is cooperating, all that stuff. Rush shooting. Union says gun had a live single round. So maybe somehow... So, I don't know. Ron James has been on movie sets. I mean, how does a live bullet get into a prop gun?
Why would there even be a live bullet on the set anywhere? Like,
I don't know, man. I've opened the Zoom thing for Ron James, but he is just hanging out there. I think he's just waiting around till 8:15. That's fine.
I'm here.
Oh, I know. I see you. I see you, sweet man.
How are you doing, boys? Is a grotesque turn of events south of the border. And when I heard you say Ron's been on movie sets, I don't know how a live round gets in a gun.
Yeah.
That's a prop gun, because they always shot blanks. I mean, they just shoot blanks. I mean, I remember the days I was in Los Angeles. I was working in props for a while. My buddy was a prop guy. And I got some work under the table, and we'd go to these massive prop houses in Los Angeles. And they would have the framed weapons used in, say, for instance, the Clint Eastwood movies, right? Mm-hmm. Or they would have the framed weapons from the first Terminator. And they were, of course, exact replicas. Or they would have Western guns that John Wayne used, some of these prop houses that dealt with him. And they were all replicas. So I don't know how a live round gets in a gun, but it's an egregious and, of course, deadly error on whose ever part it was. But the mention. I haven't been following it too closely as much as you guys have, although I did find out. But I didn't know that the Republicans jumped on the bandwagon and began eviscerating that poor man immediately.
Of course, that's their job.
Kind of biblical payback.
Oh, yeah. for doing Donald Trump impressions.
Sweet Jesus, what's the matter with them?
Well, that one guy, Vance, I don't even know his first name, almost immediately he went on saying Twitter should release Donald Trump's account because we need Alec Baldwin tweets. That's what the guy said, within hours.
Unbelievable. Whatever moral center that party had, has long since been sold to the devil, which is ironic because they're all so religious.
No, I know. Yeah, it is ironic. That whole Christian, I was going to say Judeo-Christian, but it's mostly super Christian. It's that it really is the whole, do unto others, but they don't seem to listen.
Oh, no, they don't get that.
They don't get that part.
Love thy neighbor as thyself.
No, exactly.
And it was so exemplified during the COVID crisis when they allowed me to trump we. Well, when me trumps we, everybody loses. And this defiant contempt for science in Texas and North Carolina and these south of the Mason-Dixon line, they seem to personify it more than any other place. I think Michigan's got a bit of it as well. But dear God almighty, it's reprehensible.
Ron is back. I mentioned earlier in the show, the reason Ron's back is we didn't have as much time last time because it was a little bit late, and you came in early, which is perfect. Ron's book is called All Over the Map, Rambles and Ruminations from the Canadian Road, available now. And I saw on your Instagram, because I'm a big Ron James follower, that you were getting some good traction.
I am,
the
yes.
book's doing well. So let's start with that. How is the book doing?
Well, we made number 8 on the bestseller list. We held that place, that spot for 2 weeks. Even though it's strongly themed with the Maritimes, because that's where my roots are, but it goes to Los Angeles, it embraces Canada and my adventures and my experiences embracing the spirit of people and place, that Indigo and Chapters never ordered it.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
why?
Yeah. And so I thought, I've been beating the bushes, blazing my trail here for 22 years on the road. And I was getting all these, and thanks to social media, and my fans out there who follow me, they said, look, we went in to try to find your book. We can't find your book. And so I just got into Halifax yesterday and I went into Indigo and the big store. And I talked to the young millennial manager. They're helpful.
No, I bet they are.
What I wanted to say to him was, can you get cracking, buddy? My generation liberated Holland. But I don't have any leg to hand on. You know, I don't have a leg to stand on. Because what did our generation do, really, other than line up for discos and to rah-rah Rasputin?
Exactly.
Try
cocaine a time too often.
Pardon me?
I said, try cocaine a time too often.
You think? Yeah. And anyway,
so I'm sorry. So there's a mistake.
It's not on the bestseller table.
Ron, and wait a second. So the mistake is they didn't order it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were they
for 2 weeks? It came on. It came out September the 28th. And for 2 weeks, there were no books in the stores.
That's funny.
He said, oh, yeah, we just got 24 in on Tuesday. I said, well, why isn't it on the table?
And?
He said, I just work here. It's beyond me.
Of course.
I thought, okay, fair enough. I just work here. See, that's an excuse comedians never have. I just work here.
No, exactly.
I mean, you can't drop the ball on your gig, man. You guys can't do that. You can't say, I just work here. You have to deliver.
I just blame Fred. Anything goes wrong, I just blame Fred. I go, it's Fred. Fred's in charge.
Well, that's the beauty of working with a team. Abbott and Costello did it all the time, right? It didn't hurt them.
You know, it's, you so talk anyway. about You said millennials. That's helpful. Last week, I was building a privacy fence in my backyard. I went over to the Home Depot. And, you know, sometimes picking out good wood, it's hard work because it's up in the racks inside. I'm there struggling with these 4x4s and these fence boards. I'll tell you, same thing. Two young, probably late teens who work there, stood there and watched me do it.
See?
And it was like, you know, honestly, and if we talk about our generation, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, if that was like our generation, you would probably get in trouble from the manager for not helping that older customer.
Good call.
With that.
Good call.
And I didn't even say anything to the guys. I was sort of disgusted because they saw me. They could have come over and said, hey, sir, can I help you with that? And I honestly could have hurt myself doing that.
Yeah, initiative is just not part of the ethos. I don't know, but I can just see the ghost of my father, right?
Exactly.
I can just see him saying, Lord Jesus, Ronnie, help the poor bugger. You know, yes. Or when you worked at the grocery store, you carried the bags out for, you just did those things. So this lack of initiative, and at a higher level too, there is someone who pulled it up from the muck one gig and 1 kilometer at a time, like any comedian with initiative would do. I mean, my producer and I, we started small with half a dozen shows and we beat the bushes. And sometimes you'd go into a theater that held 1,000. I remember we played Brantford, a beautiful old vaudeville house there. And the first time I played it 20 years ago, there was 135 people in the 1,018.
We'll have that come over. Very nice.
So it was like I was playing the Grand Canyon. I joked about the Grand Canyon, man.
I was like, hi, everybody.
Jesus, Murphy. I walked off stage and I said, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to do that again. And he said, Ronnie, they sounded like 350.
That's great.
But you do it a step at a time, a gig at a time, and word of mouth matters. I find that at the higher levels, there is an entrepreneurial lethargy that I don't want to paint the entire country with a brush like that, but I've always worked boutique, you know, my producer and I. And then when we had the series, Lynn Harvey's company enter the picture, we hired this excellent publicist by the name of Jill Spitz, who your producer has spoken to. And we just, and despite CBC's dismissive indifference to our show, she continued to beat the bushes. And then CBC publicity, you get pissed off that she got interviews. And to a certain degree, I'm discovering that with other outfits as well, the higher up you get. So, but that being said, a tip of the hat to the fans and social media, as you open it with, we held number 8 for 2 weeks on the bestseller list for nonfiction. And I couldn't be happier about that. And so there you go.
Well, I was going to say,
yourself after your first book.
And to compliment you on 22 years of going from, you know, 130 showing up to going across the country. And we've mentioned this several times where you'll play soft seat theaters from one coast to another now. And if you just think about the people that will show up and watch a Ron James show, some of them are going to buy books. You're going to sell books at shows. Yeah. I wanted to ask. So you're in Halifax. You're on your stand up. You're back doing stand up now.
It's my first tour since March 7th, 2020, when I stepped off stage at Hamilton Place.
Right. And the last time, just at the end, you and I were sort of talking about, I have this gig coming up and I've got to get kind of ready for it. I wanted to ask you, you have so many words per joke. It's hard to, like, a lot of stuff that I can do, I don't really need to get all the words right. I just need to get that premise out there, and then I can start tagging it with you. And I saw some video of you once going over your material because it's got to be so exact. Do you ever just think to yourself, why do I need to write 19 words when I could say I could say 4 and probably get the point across?
Oh, Howard. I mean, it's which is why I'll run like a circus performer on occasion. Just give myself a little break. I know those clips are up, but I try to do those alliterative runs judiciously, and I try to mix them up with some physical bits. But I've noticed, I have to tell you, IT guy has been posting some earlier bits of mine from years ago. And I find the ones that really do have shelf life. To quote Jerry Lewis, they asked him once, what is comedy? And he said, as far as I can see, comedy is a man in trouble. And I love that quote, although, you know, Jerry could certainly push the envelope in that respect. But there's one bit that's up there now that's an old one, old. And it's about me and my Macintosh LC520. And I'm just a man overwhelmed by forces beyond his control. And it's me just trying to connect the dots and make sense of the chaos we're all walking through and the language of laughs. And it's got physical stuff. It's got those alliterative runs that you say. And it's also got opinions on a world that's that sometimes can be overwhelming and chaotic.
Sure.
And I find those ones are the toughest ones to write. And this is where I miss the clubs, Howard, because when I watch that old computer bit, and Fred as well, but when I watch that old computer bit, I remember the bits that came in the clubs from working it out, and from it's like, you know, pressure creates diamonds, and you didn't want those quiet spots, and you needed those adhesive links in the piece. And so that's where I do miss the clubs. And I think I got evolved into that, as you say, 19 words per joke, that alliterative run as I began to write the specials, because I wasn't working them out in the clubs. And the club tone, I do miss them. I do miss the clubs, you know, but I've gone to a couple clubs and they're so friggin' young.
No, it's a weird vibe.
I mean, it was one of the things I noticed even when I played.
It's a really weird vibe.
Like, I'd be doing stuff on RSPs.
No. Listen, Ron, on any given night that I walk in there, I'm the oldest. I could pick two people and I'm older than them combined. Fred, I know you wanted to jump in there.
No, I was just going to say the language complexity. If you're having a bad night, isn't the potential for a bad night a lot more when you got to deliver those lines the way you do? Do you ever crush them, and does the audience notice? Or
And I can feel what's, I guess it's analogous to, you know, taking the turn too fast in a formula race car.
That's right.
If you take that turn too fast, you're done.
Yeah.
And I think this gets back to acting. That I did for 17 years, know your lines. And so I'm here at my place in Nova Scotia, and I've got a week to lock it in. And I feel this time there's a different vibe out there now, even though people are anticipating the return, which is great because we've got some sold out shows. I still have to deliver the kind of show that I know subtext wise the audience is going to want to hear, right? They're going to want to have some level of COVID trauma processed.
Sure.
And then they're not going to want it too political, because I think we're exhausted by it all. So I think that's the angle that has to be taken. I mean, it's still the same challenge that it always was to deliver the kind of show that you set the standard for. And that's one of the things I never want to compromise. And that's what gets difficult as you sustain your career longer, is how do you continue to deliver the kind of show that built the career,
the reputation that sells out. Okay.
Yes. Because you know what? I heard George Carlin years ago in Vegas. I paid $75, man. And it was 6 years before he died. And listen, I mean, guys, I mean, he was the prophet, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the best. He and also very alliterative, very much so. A lot of great linking words.
Oh, it was brilliant. But what bothered me toward this show, I felt bad. He talked for 90 minutes and never got a laugh.
Yeah, I know.
The other thing, he never cared to.
No, he transcended beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to get into the, you know, I don't want to get to the place where I think I'm more important than them.
Okay, but let me just stop because we've only got a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask, and everyone, go get Ron's book and these conversations we're having. I think they're interesting. I hope you do, too. I wanted to ask you about that because Fred tells a story about going to L.A. and going to the Tonight Show taping and how exciting all that is. I've done audience warm-up for sitcoms, so I know the vibe in a studio when, you know, Mildred and Buddy come in from the Midwest and they're seeing all the lights. And the point I'm getting at is a lot of times in those situations, a famous person, and when you're a famous person now, there's a few minutes, unlike any other discipline. If a famous musician comes on, the audience, you could just play your old songs and everything is great. But I've been in the Comedy Store when famous stand-ups have come on. Big names, and they get a couple of minutes of just, everything is amazing. But after that, it's time to get to work.
And it's still the same.
You still got to do the fucking job, man.
Yes, brother. Yes, 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 yes.
And so when you walk on stage in a week, there's going to be a buzz. You just get it. But that buzz dies down, and now we're all like, all right, Ronnie, what do you got for us this time?
Mm-hmm. And you can't sing Hey Jude.
Nope.
Right?
Although that would be funny if you did it.
You can't sing the hits. You still have to deliver.
Yeah.
And it's, I have a story in the book where I meet, we're at some CBC. It's called Culture Days, where you have to go and show up in a cold tent on a Tuesday in April in Winnipeg and all over the country so you can shake hands with locals who, you know, or talk about the shows that are on while executives with wine teeth tell everybody what a great job they're doing. Anyway, there's this actor who had some movies on in the States, had a series on in Canada, and he wasn't talking to me very much. We were stuck at the same table. I was trying to make small talk, and someone said, mentioned that you got another special coming on or something. He said, well, what do you do? I said, oh, I'm a comedian. And he said, oh, really? You know, my bros and I are thinking on, and he's in LA, my bros and I are thinking on working out some material at the clubs, you know, just working it out. And I thought, oh, okay, great. An actor's just going to work it out. Oh, yeah. And you know what? That same thing applies. I've been at those places where actors have thought they're going to go up and do stand up, guys. And for 2 minutes or 30 seconds, you get that applause.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do is talk to the guys who wrote it just for laughs when the stars had come in.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And they'll tell you who's good. Who's naturally funny and who's not. And you still have to deliver. And this is what's great about the calling and the craft of stand-up is there's no shortcuts. You still have to deliver. And you have to deliver according to the expectations of those people who bought tickets to see your show.
Yeah, man.
And you have to adhere to the responsibilities of the craft. And look, every tour, I'm just as nervous as I was when I was doing my first 45 at Rumors in Winnipeg.
You mentioned L.A. being in L.A. It seems every Canadian comic or actor gives it the L.A. shot. How long did yours last, and when did you come to the realization that your bread would be buttered by being a Canadian comic? And
yeah, that's a great question.
Going across this country and forgetting about that one.
I went down to do a series called My Talk Show that was created by two great Second City actresses, Deb McGrath and Linda Cash, and Andrew Alexander sold it to Ron Howard's company, Imagine TV. It was called My Talk Show, and I went down there, and we were in Newsweek on Tuesday, canceled on Thursday.
Oh, I know the story.
Monday, I was pulling a tree at Robert York's front yard with my buddy's pool digging company. Coming from head to toe in muck like a troll in a hole. And he walked out the front door with headed to the polo fields of the Will Rogers Ranch, dressed in baronial splendor, afternoon enjoying the sport of kings. And my buddy Jay, whose dad owned the landscaping company, pointed down to me and said, hey, Bob, how you doing? This is Ron. He's my buddy. He's an actor, too. Anyway, Rob Urich couldn't look at me. I saw a shiver cross his face. And oddly enough, he didn't want to talk about the impact of the Stanislavski method on contemporary American
That's
cinema.
Right.
So he bolted. And then I was out of work for a year. And Fred, that's when I was an actor then. I wasn't a stand-up, but I saw stand-ups come on our show, right? And then we would have warm-ups on. And they did the same act all the time. And it was, you know, that traditional tight 8-minute act that American talk shows wanted, things like that. And I would watch them and things, and like, Jesus. And I'd hit the high water mark with improv. I used to go down to the Third Street Promenade and improvise. So I started writing bits, and I threw my name in the hat at this Ventura Boulevard coffee house amateur nights. And I'd go up there, and it was called the Cobalt Cafe. And I mean, I was on stage with, you know, singers, poets, and I mean, I was following somebody who said they were abducted by aliens. Right? And I shared the stage with the illegitimate spawn of the Charles Manson clan, who I swore wandered in from their Chatsworth sagebrush warrens with poetry and prose and the love that Charlie never gave. And so I started reading then. I was reading stories about the collision of my fantasy of Los Angeles, having grown up watching cowboy movies and movies in Nova Scotia, with the reality of Los Angeles. And that became Up and Down in Shaky Town, yeah. One Man's Journey Through the California Dream, that moved me into solo. And so that's when I started, really, Fred, was in the winter of 91, just to stay sane. I was still going to auditions. I'd pick up a commercial once every, I don't know, 5 months. I was just going into unholy debt. Geez, I got audited when I made $37,000 one year. $37,000! Because Buddy, who I got to do the H&R Block accountant, who I got to do at the mall, who also played an accountant on an episode of Man. That's how weird it is down there.
No, I know.
A decimal point in the wrong place. I was driving a 79 Dodge Colt that every time I pulled it out of the friggin' driveway, there was a dead seabird floating in the oil on the floor. It was mental. But I just kept, you know, I kept going to auditions and trying to land something and getting close or getting no and all those different things that everybody suffers. I mean, I'm not unique in that respect. But trying to make sense of the world I was in according to my own terms. And then when I came back to Canada, I put up Shaky Town on my own buck, rent the theater, got some good reviews, and then started doing amateur night again. And then started doing amateur night at the Laugh Resort.
Wow.
So we did that for 6 months.
That was the Laugh Resort, was at that Holiday Inn on King, was it not?
Yeah, that was the second incarnation.
Okay.
The first one was on Lombard Street at the corner of Victoria, which ironically was a block from where I started at 110 Lombard with Second City 10 years before.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was a great club, had a television demographic. Remember they used to say on those Parker Brothers games, fun for kids from 8 to 80?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think that's what the Laugh Resort was, fun for people from 18 to 80. And I just kept at it, you know, and there was a great bunch of comedians there at the time. And then I'd pick up some work with Yucks. But it's like Carlin used to say, right? Stage time, stage time, stage time.
Yeah.
And every comedian will say that, Howard and Fred. So it was this realization that I took from America in chasing the American dream and not grabbing the grail, as so many Canadians have tried and many have.
Well, listen, Ron,
coming home.
I got to tell you, I could talk to you for days. All over the map, rambles and ruminations from the Canadian road. Best of luck. Break a leg.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great run.
Fred.
And when you're back in town, I want to take you out for coffee. We can talk stand-up all the live long
day.
Did
you guys get books, by the way? Did you guys ever get books?
No, we haven't.
All right.
I'll tell you why, because
we couldn't find it at Trump.
Exactly. I asked some kid at Home Depot. Yeah, both of us were racing for that one. Mine was going to be this. I asked some kid at Home Depot. Didn't know where the fuck it was. The double callback. All right, Ronnie, take care, man.
Hey, guys, thanks. Have a good day.
What a good boy. Ron James, there he is. And he's go look at his Instagram for all his tour dates. Just think about it. There was a time we didn't like Ron James. We used to make fun of him all the time. Remember, we've grown now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like anything else. Sometimes you might not like the product, but you respect that it exists.
Well, yeah, I mean,
or how it exists.
Yeah, there's a guy that he's more. We have more in common with him than we might one day have thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did, you did. We said some pretty shitty things about his act. You know, we just did. We used to make fun of it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, now we're buddies. And as you say, you got to respect what he does. You know what else you have to respect? This.
Yeah, the Chambers Plan, Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. It's there. It's possible. Your small business can have the benefits. Yes. Whether it's, prescriptions or dental or eyewear or therapies, the Teladoc system, it's all there. Go to chamberplan.ca, get a free quote today. You can buy in at different levels. There is one that will work for you and your small company. Your group of people will love you for thinking about them in such a manner, giving them the security that comes with a benefits package. Chamberplan.ca is where to go. 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of this. They've been around for 40 years, very stable, and the smart way to get your people a benefits package. Chamberplan.ca.
You know who Ron James was today? Ron James, the Gig Sky guest of the day. Na-na-na. Gig Sky data plans are prepaid with no contracts or recurring fees. You get what you pay for, and your service is never throttled. Is your service throttled? Stop it, okay? If you are looking for a different way to play, Gig Sky's latest service includes mobile data while flying in the sky. When traveling on selected airlines or routes, you can get mobile data. Go to gigsky.com/aeromobile. And, of course, you can get a discount. Download the Gig Sky app today. Enter the code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan, or visit gigsky.com for more information. I'll also tell you, I'm going away, as I mentioned. I've been corresponding with my buddy, our buddy, Tim Daniels at Health Gauge. And it's going to be cool. You know, this is somebody that knew me from the Moose Jaw days, Moose Jaw times. And now he's become a client and a buddy of ours. And this Health Gauge, you were always a watch wearer. I really wasn't. This is the first time I've worn a watch in a long time, man. And now I can't imagine life without it. Whether you're looking to make changes in your activity level, how many calories are you burning in a day? What's your blood pressure, your oxygen saturation, and so much more? This information can be shared with your doctors, with your nutritionists, with your team. Go to healthgauge.com. Promo code is HumbleFred15. Healthgauge.com and the promo code HumbleFred15. Go get that watch. It's more than just a watch, Fred. It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle.
Yes, I'm starting to feel naked without it.
Oh, I know. Yours is always like, I'm charging and stuff. By the way, Dan Duran's... I know. Well, I do charge it. But I also charge it and then put it back on my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
H9VBDZ is checking in here.
Were you going to... He's in the Peterborough area. Were you going to tell that story first?
Yes, I am.
Leading into Dan Duran?
I am going to tell it with Dan Duran, yes.
Oh, excellent.
Because Dan Duran... Isn't it weird? I've known you guys. There's Dan Duran. Look at him.
Yeah.
H9VBDZ.
Yeah. Forgot to change it again today. I changed it somewhere, but it didn't take.
It's all right, man.
Yeah.
So I got up yesterday. I said to Rachel, hey, why don't we do some adventure? today. It's a beautiful sunny fall day, and I was gonna, I originally said there was a restaurant in the Prince Edward County that we tried to get a reservation at, but you can't because Prince Edward County is full of snooty county people.
They were booked already?
Everything was booked, man. I was at a barbecue a couple summers ago, and I was sitting across from some couple, and they were from that area, but they kept calling it the county. Like, yeah. Like we're supposed to be like, oh, you're in the county. Like, it's the fucking Hampshires or something.
Hey, buddy, you look like the coward of the county.
Everyone considered him.
You know, there's a bit of a problem going on there. The locals are getting tired of people from Toronto moving there and crowding it up on weekends and yeah, all the trendy restaurants. You know, that's just so predictable whenever that happens. The locals get upset with the infiltrators.
Yeah, you know who ruined it? Anthony.
Yes, part, you know, he's partly to blame.
So, he's the one guy.
That he's the one guy. Everything was fine in the county.
Tell Andrew.
I got to be honest with you. I'd never even heard of it. So anyway, I tried to get a reservation. Couldn't. So we thought. I said, you know what? I said to Rachel, here's something. I said, let's do this. It's going to sound weird, but I've never been to Peterborough. I've been around it. I visited Fred and Dan many, many times over many years. But I think I've said this to you before, Dan. I've never been to downtown Peterborough. Well, so now I have.
You ventured in. Wow. I
did. And you know what, fellas? The electric town or electric city, whatever they call it, is pretty nice.
It is.
It's very nice down there, boys.
Yeah, it depends.
Well, okay.
Fred's less of a fan than I am.
I'll tell you. We were down on George Street.
Yes, that's the main drag. Young Street.
Right. And then there was a cross street. I can't remember the name of that one, but it was a really nice area.
Probably Hunter. That's sort of the trendy area.
And we ate at this really... I want to give these people what you kids call a shout out. It's the Electric City Bread Company. And it's just a couple of young people who run this. It's a he was a guy that was a... Guy's name is Connor, or I think, and he worked at a bar, and he had an eye towards wanting to do something on his own, learned how to bake, and I will tell you, I took away, first of all, the food was amazing, like really good, Dan, you'd love it, because it had great coffee, the food was trendy, but well made, and then I took home a butter tart made of croissant bread.
Oh,
it might be one of the best things I've ever eaten. Yeah, Daddy was a bit high. Daddy was a little bit high last night, but I tell you, it was good. God damn, it was good.
Dan, have you been there? Do you know what street it's on?
It's on Sherbrooke.
Sherbrooke.
Right. Okay.
I got to tell you, it's 165. Sorry, no, it's 279 Westcott Street.
Westcott. Oh, okay.
Well, no, maybe that's their official. No, but you're right. It is on Sherbrooke. It was Sherbrooke Street.
I think that it wasn't there when I was a local. I don't think.
So,
yeah, so there's Simcoe, King, and then Sherbrooke.
Yeah, it's on Sherbrooke. So I apologize, but I was looking at the receipt, and the receipt has been generated by somewhere else. But anyway, it was wasn't super expensive. And, you know, had like their version of Eggs Benedict that was amazing. And Rachel had a croque monsieur. And we both had...
Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know.
I always wondered. It's on
the croque monsieur. And both of us had their soup. And anyways, then we went for a walk. And there was a little park near a dock area, a marina.
Mm-hmm.
It was very nice, Fred.
Oh, no, very that's nice. That little lake area. What do you call that? What's that park? McCreary? What's it called?
Del Curry Park.
He play for the Raptors?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then right near there is where they do a music fest during the summer. You may have seen an amphitheater.
There was an amphitheater shell there.
Yeah, and that turns into a big free concert series during the summer normal.
The only guy in concert that day was this homeless dude, but he seemed to be there was a homeless dude on stage at the shell there, and I was like, Rachel, we should wait because I think this is going to be good. But we took Stan for a walk there, and I just spent a couple hours, and so I'd never been in the city of Peterborough, and it was very, very nice.
You know, the ratio of cool restaurants to the size of the town was always huge. Is it still that way, Dan? There was so many neat little restaurants in that town. Definitely. In fact, there was more cool, neat restaurants in Peterborough than there is in Brampton. And Brampton's, what, 10 times the size? It's, you know, some come and go, and I don't know what COVID did. But, yeah, a lot of young entrepreneur chefs chose Peterborough to open up business, I guess, for the cost. And the benefits were fantastic. A lot of good restaurants.
Yeah.
Well, part of the reason is because there's a high student population in town. Mm-hmm. A lot of musicians and artists in that area there. There's a first Friday of the month, there's an art crawl that just started up again where you can go to all these different art galleries or, you know, artist studios and stuff. It's quite astonishing how the it really does pull its way in the arts.
Well, I'll tell you, I was at the Electric City Bread Company. I was texting the great Dan Duran because I said, hey, we're here in Peterborough. It shows on my mapping system that I'm only 17 minutes from your lake home. But Dan Duran was too busy. He was at a play reading. I said to Rachel, I'm like, what are the chances of all the Sundays that I've never come to Peterborough? Dan Duran would be busy doing something in the arts, of course. Dan Duran.
What were you doing?
There's a play reading at the Peterborough Art, forget the name of the company, but it's a theater company in town. And Linda Cash, my friend, who I used to work on the morning show, and Ron James just mentioned, she was, they're doing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the play reading. And it was, I'd never
what
seen
it. What is that? What does that mean, play reading? What
they just don't act it out. They just read it. A bunch of actors get around and read it.
Well, they read act.
They read act, yes.
For what reason? For what point? Like, what's the point of it? Just for an exercise? Like?
Yeah. Just for people to, you know, see the play. And, I mean, the actors put something in it. They rehearse. And Linda was amazing.
Yeah, I bet she was.
Did you play Virginia?
No, Linda played
Dan was like, Dan was out there going,
you're versatile.
Exactly. Yeah, Dan was like, what the fuck, man? I could have been Virginia Woolf.
The whole time I was going, I could have played any one of those four roles. Yeah.
But, no, what role did you have? Did you have a significant role?
I was a member of the audience.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were part of it.
No. Dan was just there reading.
I just assumed he would be part of that.
Well, people bought tickets and yeah.
Now, when you're at those shows, are you constantly, you know, overtaken by people who want your autograph and they go, oh my God, that's Dan Duran. All the celebrities are here.
Nah, that's not the way it works in Peterborough.
Oh, really?
But, you know, people recognize you and say hi.
Yeah, aww. He's the old weather guy. He was the TV star.
That's right, TV.
My question would be, did you have to buy the ticket or did Linda give it to you?
Well, I did get a comp, so let's put it.
Oh,
no. Yeah. Well, and the whole point of it, Dan, is I wanted to come visit you in your new lake home, and I was going to bring you a croissant or something.
Oh, really? Like a housewarming?
A housewarming confection.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been lovely.
Well,
but so I just happened in the middle of it that he texted me like, hey, you're around right now. And, well, I'm just going into this play. It was like 1 o'clock or something. And I said, well, you know, there's a long one. I might be out at 3:30 or 4.
I've never heard of this. So it's almost like when you see those like table reads for sitcoms and stuff. It's sort
of
like
that's exactly
like,
what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know such a thing existed.
Dan, before we get to your news, you know, you texted me some information that I wasn't aware of, or maybe we can pass on. You say that, from my understanding, a live round refers to a blank as well as a bullet on the set.
Yes.
This is back to Alec Baldwin. So when a blank is discharged from a prop gun, it does something shoot out of it?
I was researching this on the week because I was very curious about how that possibly – it's still – I don't understand it, how it could possibly even happen. But blanks, from my understanding, is that there's no actual projectile in there, but there can be fragments, and there's, you know, like within 50 feet of the gun, it's very dangerous still because there's, you know, whatever's expelling from the gun, the gases, whatever's left that hasn't been incinerated in the powder, the gunpowder, comes out of the gun, and that's what can hurt people. And, you know, it's also a bullet casing the head's been crushed. Instead of the bullet being there, it's just the casing's been crushed around it. So that can also fragment a little bit as well.
You know that guy a few years ago, I don't know his name, I don't remember things, that was kidding around and put it to his head because he thought
It was not loaded.
It was not loaded, but just the
dangerous. Yeah.
The gunpowder and the force killed him.
Right.
That actor, I forget his name. I was reading about that, and it was, you know, just a crazy thing. He thought he was being funny. Oh, it's a blank. And he puts it to his head and pulls it, and it killed him. They said it moved like his skull 6 inches inward or something. Scary stuff. So you can only imagine that, you know, from several feet, it would still have some kind of impact. Yeah.
Apparently, from I was reading this morning, and this is, you're going to keep hearing different stories about what happened because it's just so early in the process. But the director or the I think the director said that what they had gone for, they had broken for lunch, and they had said that the gun was not loaded. It's a cold gun or whatever.
Yeah, so it was cold gun. Yeah.
And they came back from lunch, and the director wasn't sure that it had been rechecked to make sure that it was still empty. And he was, Alec Baldwin was in this, you know, this manufactured church somewhere, and they, which was the set, and was rehearsing drawing the gun, and that's when it went off.
Well, that's what I said to Fred. I said, the first time he took it out of his holster, nothing happened. The second time he took it out, and again, it's unclear from the article I read that, like, you assume he was pointing it and shooting it, but it sort of sounds like he took it out of the holster and it fired by mistake, which it had done earlier in this process.
So, right. Talk about bad luck, bad timing, bad position of that woman. Can I go a little conspiracy on you guys for a second? There was problems on the set. People were upset not being paid. Sabotage. Somebody sabotaged.
I'm sure that's entering the sheriff's mind. Because there was,
I'm just wondering if somebody thought, "Oh, I'll fix you up."
And well, I mean,
son of a bitch.
There were six union people that left. There had been stories of complaints. It was a low budget film. They were filming at a set in Santa Fe. They call it the Bonanza set because it was a sort of a pre-existing structures there for movies.
You know, I've been watching a lot of Columbo lately, and it's funny. Immediately, my mind's going, see it. This would be like a Columbo thing.
That's right.
Guy puts the bullet. I don't like you. I'm going to put a bullet in that gun, and you're going to end up killing
somebody.
Hey,
you know, I got a new show for you. Murder, She Wrote. You should check that one out.
I got a recommendation. Kojak.
Yeah, here's another one. How about
Columbo's
Mannix?
Great. They don't touch Mannix, Columbo.
Yeah. How about, who's that? Jake, remember, could they have a show now? You'd never fucking see this. Jake and the Fat Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'd be like, you can't body shame Cannon. Cannon was like the guy. He was the same guy, wasn't he? The fat man or a different fat guy?
Hey, one of my favorite years ago was, remember It Takes a Thief with Robert Wagner?
Oh, I love
Wagner.
That.
It was
love
a great
show.
But anyway, guys, I think you can go with me a bit. It's like the perfect, it's one of those scenarios you'd see on one of those shows that somebody could actually do that to another human being so they would.
They snuck it in there before they left the set kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What? Thank you, Detective Fred.
Oh, you're
going to
look me in the eye,
yes,
over cyberspace, and tell me that that couldn't happen.
No, I'm not. I'm too tired. To,
look at me. Look at me.
Look at me.
Look at me.
Look at me. Look at me. You're looking right in the eye.
Credentials he has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
Now, Dan Duran, just so you know, this news today. Have you done the retirement Sherpa yet there, fella?
Not yet.
This news will be brought to you by the retirement Sherpa. Details to follow first here from his Lakeside Studios and in Peterborough. There's Dan Duran.
Today is National Greasy Foods Day. To celebrate, use grease for good. The Facebook algorithm is a monster.
Mm.
2019, Facebook researchers created a dummy profile for a fictitious conservative woman named Carol Smith. Aw, Carol. And within two days, the social network was steering her towards QAnon. The site recommended she join some groups dedicated to conspiracy theories of various flavors within a week, despite the fact that researchers had only indicated that she was interested in politics, parenting, and Christianity.
Wow.
And that was all part of that, that Frances Haugen, who testified and released a bunch of documents about Facebook.
Yeah, that was only a couple of weeks ago, right on 60 Minutes.
Yeah. Similar, and it, like they're now like absorbing what was in that treasure trove of documents, and they did the same thing in India around the same time, and within 3 weeks there, a New Year's feed filled with fake news and incendiary images, graphic photos of beheadings, doctored images of India airstrikes and stuff. It was like way more pervasive than it was in North America, or for English speakers, I guess. It's an odd thing that, I mean, that so whoever's monitoring Facebook in the Facebook world is not monitoring other countries quite as much as they are in North America. So things get through that they that never would get through in North America because they're not putting the resources. They're not taking enough, you know, people. And India is a massive country. There's, well, you know, 22 languages that they've got to work through there, and they're just not really
How many billion people are on Facebook? It's in the billions, right? Is it not?
Yeah. I believe so. Yeah, I haven't looked at it.
Well, how big a job monitoring? How do you do that?
Like, yeah, but that, I would argue that that's your responsibility.
Oh, I get it. Right? I get it. But it's just gotten away from them, I guess, in numbers. Like,
well, the thing is, you do that. I agree. It's their responsibility, but and again, not being a computer expert like you, the algorithm, the AI aspect of this is what's pushing this activity toward accounts.
Yes.
And so it's almost like the future is now. It's taken over. That whistleblower, all she can tell you is what Facebook, you know, their policies are, but the algorithm, the way it feeds itself, the way that your choices become what your the information you're given, how do you combat that, Daniel? How do you tell people to stop liking things? Because by liking something, even if it's fictitious, that those that information starts coming back to you.
Well, that algorithm obviously needs to be, you know, worked on, but it goes against the idea of profit for Facebook, because obviously conflict is a thing that people are more interested in rather than, you know, just pouring good stuff. So they push anything that creates conflict, right? So
no, when you think about Facebook, like, you know, when it started, it was like, hey, I went to high school with that guy, you know, gusting to everything is awful. The Christ is risen.
Well, I sat with somebody after the election and they said to me they could never vote conservative because if the conservatives got in, they would have done away with abortion, and he didn't like their anti-gay legislation. Anti-gay legislation is how he put it.
Yeah.
We're talking Canada now, right?
Canada. Yes. Yes. Yeah, we're talking States, Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, where would you get that other than reading somebody's Facebook posting that they just wrote that, or they heard it from somebody who heard it from somebody who heard it from somebody that turns into, yeah, the conservatives are going to abolish abortion in Canada and they've got anti-gay legislation. I mean, just flat out untrue. It would be suicidal for any political country, political party in this country. But that's the gospel to them. Just probably because you pick it up along the way and you like the sound of it, so you use it. It's bizarre.
Well, you know, that's one. So there's one aspect of it. I watched a clip yesterday from this guy from The Daily Show, Jordan Clapper, talking to some Trump supporters. And they don't know what they think, except they're wearing all these Trump is president still T-shirts because part of them, again, it's gone from like, oh, that's the guy I went to high school with, to Trump is still the president. Anyways, we got to run.
I saw some of that, and one of the things I think that he came up with is that everybody now has their own micro reality, which I thought was a really interesting term. Micro reality. It's like, oh, man, we're never, you know, where are we all going?
Well, I'm trying to get off the planet as quickly as I can, Dan. So that's where I'm going.
Can't wait for Donald Trump's new social media thing.
Oh, no, Truth Social. Exactly. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week.
Hey, everybody.
Well, listen, thanks to Ron James. Thanks to everyone. Yes, of course, the retirement.
Tim Niblett.
Sherpa.
Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. If you have a portfolio already, want somebody to have a second look at it, Tim is your guy. He's helped many Humble and Fred listeners with such a thing, build something from scratch. Tim is your guy. He knows everything from all angles, works both sides of the border. He's fantastic. RetirementSherpa.ca.
And again, tomorrow we'll be back. There'll be more show. Tomorrow, Fred Ball will be here. And I don't know if this is Hazel McCallion is calling in.
Come on.
That's what it says here.
Really?
That's got to be a bit.
Well, maybe. So if she still, if she continues to live one more day, Hazel McCallier will be our guest.
Maybe she's got some advice on your ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. If she calls in, don't bring up the fact that we've seen her underpants, okay? Because this is just that's not for the show.
No.
Okay, bye. Ambulance driver, shine your shoes with your microphone blues, your suits with your parachute boots, passing the Gucci from coast to coast, like a man, yeah, Wilson.